Welcome to episode 99 of Glee Chat. As you can probably tell, I am not John. John could not make it this episode, just for personal reasons. And Natalie's not here either, so I have Mitchell and Caitlin with me. We are going to be recapping Glee Season 6, Episode 6, What the World Needs Now. Mitch, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm doing good, and I think I'm not doing as good as you are, because I almost wanted to title this episode of Bleach automatically Base 80s, but I'll let the magic make itself for a bit, see what else we come up with.
Yes, there is much Base 80s in this episode, I'm excited.
Much Base
80s. Caitlin, how are you going? How's your grading papers?
It is a pile that still needs a lot of grading.
Yeah.
The never-ending work of a teacher.
So when did school start back up for you then?
Oh, at the beginning of January. So we've done
early.
5 weeks of the semester so far.
That doesn't sound fun. I didn't start school until like another 2 weeks. I had like 3 months off between my years. It's pretty good. Okay, so I guess we just get straight into the episode. This episode wasn't too bad. I'm going to admit I barely knew any of the music. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because I've never heard of Burt Bacharach before. I honestly have no idea. But regardless, so Sam and Rachel start the episode off planning to have a date at Breadsticks. This is just awkward for everyone. For me at least, but just watching it was really awkward, and I think it was meant to be, which was good. They go into the performance of I'll Never Fall in Love Again. And this song was kind of weird because they were singing about how they never fall in love again, but in like a romantic sort of manner. I was a bit confused by it. Caitlin, what do you think of the whole Sam and Rachel plot that's going on? Because I personally don't like it. But I couldn't remember if you said that you did or didn't on a previous episode.
I mean, I'm all in favor of the two of them, but this is so awkward with the whole hypnotism thing, and
yeah,
I don't know what to do with it. And then this was a really weird way to deal with the song. I didn't get until I saw a commentary later that was representing that they like both ditched out on the date. I was like, oh, that's what happened. It was very confusing. The whole mechanics of it made no sense to me.
Yeah, like they were singing about how they're never going to fall in love and it's only heartbreak and bad things, but then it seemed like they were singing it as like a love song, because then everyone around them was all like lovey-dovey, so I don't know. Mitch, what do you think?
Well, it's nice because I really like their voices, quite frankly, enough to ignore the context of whatever story this must have been. Because I agree, Caitlin, I was confused. I didn't know that it was them ditching the date then and there. That was the thing. I just kind of saw them wandering around the halls of McKinley and being like, la-di-da-di-da, I love Sam/Rachel. You know, it didn't seem like too plot-driven. It was weird. So, and if I'm not mistaken, yeah, this was like the opening thing, and they haven't seemed to have done too many of those episodes in recent memory, Jack. I think this is kind of like a special thing that they would actually start off with this song right then and there, wouldn't they?
What do you mean? So like,
no dialogue, just like song. Open song.
No, they do it all the time. Like, I remember the Michael Jackson episode, they had like 5 seconds of dialogue of them like setting up the episode, and then Blaine goes right into Wanna Be Starting Something.
Yeah,
you know,
they do it
a few times, yeah.
No, I'm saying, not that they haven't done it before, but just recently, they haven't gone back to that format. So it did feel like,
Glee, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it felt good. And I wouldn't say foreign in a bad way, but, and I hesitate to say anything about anything acting like old Glee, because whenever I say that, I think of when John was talking about, major news outlets reporting that Glee is getting back into the swing of things. I was like, no, it's not. It's definitely not. And now that I want to say that, I feel like it wouldn't come out the right way. So I'll say it like this. Glee is performing well because it is focusing on its stronger plots in this episode.
I would agree with that. Except for the whole Sam and Rachel thing. I think it's one of the weakest things. Not weakest thing, okay.
No, I can take that. I can.
I like everything that's said about like Rachel having to get back out there, and Mercedes was perfect. We'll get into more of that later. But I just don't like how they're using Sam for that. Like how Mercedes says that she needs Rachel's heart to be healed and for her to realize love is possible again. But I don't think Sam is the right person for that. I don't even know who is. Like, Jesse maybe, but, you know. Anyway, so the next scene is in Brittany's room. Yeah, Brittany's back for this episode, obviously, because she's getting married soon. And this was so funny because I read about this earlier, but Ken Jeong and Jennifer Coolidge are Brittany's parents. I don't think this is one of the most perfect casting Glee's ever done. It's so funny to me. And those two are just great actors and actress. Work really well together. And really, we find out in this scene that ultimately Stephen Hawking is Brittany's real father. And yeah.
See, that's the kind of outrageous that Glee needs to stick with, because it's I don't know, I guess it's more off-screen, and that's why I like it better. I like the off-screen outrageous as opposed to the on-screen shove you to an elevator and drug you. Like, if they maybe just mentioned... no, that would have still been wrong. But that's... I mean, Caitlin, I remember you saying that you liked Crack Glee, but you don't like this Crack Glee that they've been doing recently. Did you like that Crack plot that Stephen Hawking was their father?
I mean, it's silly, but, I mean... The Crack, I didn't like the way they were approaching meta. This is not meta, so it's fine with me. That doesn't offend me in the way that the other episodes were.
And with Brittany, like, she always just says stuff where it's so messed up and you don't know if it's real. So this was really, really fitting with that.
I know, yeah, no. I still wondered if this was still supposed to be true at the end of the episode, like if the mom wasn't just still making that up or something, because I don't know, but maybe not, because it was a very detailed story that she told.
Well, Brittany's going to MIT. She's a math genius.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Maybe they've been saving this like as their anti-guard the whole time, and I don't mean to get too tactical about the interworkings of whatever might have happened there. As far as I know, Stephen Hawking's cannot move a single appendage past his head.
That's the joke. Not that he can't do that, but because it's like, really? Really?
Right. So it's just got, it's kind of like we live in this outrageous Glee world where even someone that's a paraplegic from the head down can still have sex and have a baby. Which I guess it might happen. I don't know. Like, depends, because if you think about it, there's some science to it, because, I mean, Artie is paralyzed from the waist down, but is still able to have sex, so I guess that this could have been legitimate. This really could have happened in some Crack Glee universe. Not that I want it to be, you know? I don't really need to visualize anymore.
I think
about
you're
this.
Thinking a little too hard about this specific joke, Mitch. I think this was meant to be, like, an amusing joke that we then move on from.
Fair enough. Jennifer Coolidge lives it so well.
Yeah, she's good. I love her in Legally Blonde. She's hilarious.
Her comedic timing is perfect. Like, in this, when she goes, "I am of average intelligence, and your father is of below average intelligence." She says it's so funny.
But I didn't like her father in the way that he was, like, we've had this conversation before, and it's like, yes, 90 times. And he's like, and then she's like, yeah, we've really had this. And he's like, no, I really don't think we have. I was like, no, that's, no one's really that stupid. Like, if you're that stupid, you wouldn't be dressed right now. You wouldn't exist. You'd be hit by, like, a car. You'd forget that you can't walk into the street. So that humor I didn't appreciate, but maybe you guys did.
Ken Jeong is usually really good. He was a little bit off in this, like, his portrayal here, but just the fact that, like, Jennifer Coolidge was, like, they're working together, I think it worked better than it would have done.
Yeah. But they're good comedians for this. I do appreciate them both in here. So that was fun. And Natalie was really upset at Brittany having an Asian descended father, but he no longer does.
I think Natalie was more upset with, she thought that they were going to sort of be a bit, like, sexually exploitative with Jennifer Coolidge because sort of the roles she has played in the past. And as far as we can see, it's not going to be like that. So I think Natalie would have been happy with this.
Okay, cool.
The issue there is also that Blaine should be part Asian, and they've cast his mother, and she is not Asian. And then they give Brittany, who is white, an Asian father. But then it turns out he's not actually her father. So
Yeah, that's what I was referencing, Caitlin.
Yeah. Anyway, so the next scene, Kurt and Rachel inform the Glee Club that they must work hard after their win at the Sue's Weird Invitationals because the Warblers and Vocal Adrenaline are going to try and get back their, their mojo, like their courage and stuff. And they assign the Glee Club the music by Bert Bacharach. Who is this? Caitlin, Mitch, do you know, like, have you heard of him before?
No.
I knew a few of the songs, but I had no idea who the artist was.
Same, do you want to hear something really funny? Wait, so am I meant to know that there was one artist this entire episode? was that a thing? Did I just not pay attention enough to not know that, and I just didn't recognize the artist?
That's... Yeah, that was the episode. Oh, like, God. The theme, it was, their lesson was Burt Bacharach tribute.
That's hilarious. I think I got distracted when Rachel left, and then, I'm not going to get into that, what happens, but I don't know. I wasn't thinking of it. I got distracted by the plot enough to not really care about the songs this episode. That's really funny. I can't believe that I missed that big of a plot detail right in the beginning. I must have daydreamed. I don't know.
Especially because there were way too many songs in this episode.
No, there were a lot of songs, so it felt easy to daydream. And I wouldn't say it's always in a bad way, because some of the better episodes of Glee are ones where I felt that way. And it's weird that I would like an episode where I daydream in it. I don't know. I guess my brain needs a break in these episodes of Glee in general, because it's a very fast-paced show. So sometimes I need to just like collect whatever I just heard and just, like, see a pretty image and hear a pretty song, but not necessarily care what's going on screen.
You're like a five-year-old.
I know, right? I feel like I'm watching... I feel like I should just watch Sesame Street instead. I'd be much happier.
I have a bit of a problem with the music, though. Like, I mean, the music in this season has been really good, but I feel like there has been a lot of slow, like, sort of slower ballady sort of music, which isn't bad, but I feel like it's been a really, like, off, like, you know, it's been off balance, you know, like, I feel like we've had a lot more slower sort of music as opposed to more upbeat poppy stuff. And not that, like, that's really a bad thing, but, you know, we've had this whole episode with eight songs of that. And then last week we had like three of the New Direction slow songs, which I liked, but still. And then,
they were very slow.
Alanis Morissette and Carole King tribute was a lot of slow music as well, which, you know, that was good music, but I still feel like it's a bit off balance. So yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In this episode, I thought the pacing felt overly slow, and then the very slow music and there being a lot of it just made it seem even slower. And then after the frantic pace of the last couple, it's really jarring.
I know, in the last like two episodes, you have to, like, if you blinked and looked away for 5 seconds, you'd miss, like, you know, a whole Sue rant, you know.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, because, yeah, then...
And Mercedes didn't really have a rant in this episode to, like, make up for what Sue would have presented if she was in the episode. It's funny.
But Mercedes never rants, though.
I'm sorry, I was thinking Santana when I said Mercedes. Well, Santana would have usually taken, I think, the place of Sue in giving some kind of fast-paced rant. And without going into details, I think that Brittany spiced it up just enough with hers that it was still, like, an exciting moment when it happened, you know? And that brought the pace back up, as long as we're just talking about pace, not, like, plot details.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Yeah. Anyway, we already mentioned it a little bit, but to train the Glee Club, they bring back my bae, Sadies. And I'm very, very excited about this, because Mercedes and Rachel have been, they're just perfect this episode. And Caitlin, I know you're a huge fan of girls helping out girls and that friendship that gets portrayed on TV. But ultimately, so Mercedes really comes back to encourage Rachel to go back onto Broadway. And in a scene in the teacher's room, she lets Rachel know that her friend is making and producing a new Broadway musical and has gotten Rachel an audition for it. And she also confronts Rachel about her and Sam and what's going on there, but not in a bad way. So, Caitlin, what do you think about Rachel and Mercedes thus far into the episode?
Oh, it's so good. She's...
Yeah.
Rachel is in a place where she's very, like, trying to be safe. And she's come to a place that she recognizes and has felt comfortable in. And Mercedes recognizes it, but she also recognizes that her friend, who they've had diva offs against, so Mercedes is like the perfect person to be doing this, recognizes Rachel is fit for more because they're the two big divas. So it's just such an amazing friendship that she has, that she's just saying, I'm going to push you to be the best you can be because you are scared to be that right now. You're still struggling, but I know you're better than that. You're better than just being stuck. And it's so wonderful just to see. So often TV just needs to push two women to fight over a man. They need to, like, claw and tear each other down. We don't see enough women being supportive of each other and lifting each other up. And that's all this episode was, essentially. It was women lifting each other up. The men were pretty much in the background the entire episode, unless they were directly interacting with the girls. So it was really refreshing to see all the women supporting each other and being there for each other.
Yeah. And what was really good about this as well is with Mercedes and Rachel, there was literally no underlying like motivations that either of them had, like selfish motivations, you know. And I think that just goes akin, not even just that, is the fact that they could have been with Sam and Mercedes, but they're all very mature and have worked that out really well and used that as a vehicle for Mercedes to be more encouraging to Rachel and try to help her out in the long run. You know,
could have turned into something when she's like, so what's going on with you and Sam? And it's just, it doesn't become anything. And that's so refreshing. We don't see that enough.
It just shows the maturity and the progression that this friendship has had over the course of six seasons. And not only, and like, we've literally seen it on screen and it's really good. Mitch, what do you think?
Yeah, and it's a nice transition, too, to go from my brain thinking of, you know, what's most current in my watch with Mercedes and Rachel going against each other and their diva off and then kind of becoming friends after it, even more so than before, because they're just like, whatever, we're better as a team than apart. And now seeing them evolve all the way to this makes me really happy. And I don't want to talk more about what Mercedes says to Rachel, because I cannot remember off the top of my head when she says the things that she does. I think it's later, but she has a really important conversation with Rachel that solidifies that this continuity of their relationship is going to be important to us, and that it's important also that Rachel has, you know, such a good girlfriend in her life that she needs that balance still, because I don't know. It's not like I can ever really imagine her having a good girlfriend throughout this show. And all of a sudden, it just seems like Mercedes has been there all along. And it's really nice to see her come back and do good and not just, like, you know, come over to mess stuff up, right?
Well, no matter how much we ever saw, like, Santana and Rachel in New York trying to be friends and how much they tried to sell that to us, it worked in many ways. However, this just feels so real, you know?
Yeah, I never bought Mercedes friends. And Rachel. I never ever bought Rachel and Santana as friends. They don't have good organic chemistry to me, the characters themselves, and they don't find common ground because they don't try. It just seems like they're always out for blood, you know, and it didn't feel like they're ever going to have a symbiotic relationship going on.
Well, and now they're not competing for anything, because when they were both in New Directions, they both had these really incredible voices and were trying to compete to get the good solo parts in competition. And now they're both in completely different trajectories in their career. So there's absolutely no sense of competition between them that could darken anything in their relationship.
Yeah. And then when you think about Santana, she like forced her way into Rachel's career just to stir up trouble, you know? Anyway, all right, so at the end of this scene, Mercedes sings Baby, It's You, and notice, I don't know if you guys noticed in the Google Doc, I wrote that B-A-E-B-Y, It's You, haha, baby. And at the end of the performance, Rachel says she is still not ready to go back to Broadway. okay, so back in Brittany's room, she enlists Artie as their wedding planner.
Wait, we should move on for Baby, It's You without noting the fact that Rachel was singing in the song that was meant to be presented to her. What? Because Mercedes is like, I have something to show you. And then Rachel's just like, in the performance. It just, what? And at first, like, she looks really different with her hair up in that you know, very specific fashion for whatever genre or whatever, you know, time period that was meant to be. I'm sure maybe one of you could cue me in if you know. But at first, I couldn't tell who she was. And my mind was playing tricks on me. I thought she might have been Quinn. I thought this was supposed to be another Unholy Trinity moment. And I was like, wait, when did Quinn come into this episode? And, you know, it was funny.
Yeah. And they all looked incredible as well. All right. So back in Brittany's room, Brittany enlists Artie as the wedding planner. Amidst of a list of potential themes for the wedding, and she reels off a few, including scissors and tuna. She suggests heaven, and then this goes into the performance of wishing and hoping. And this shows a lot of the Glee Club members, like, in a heaven, you know, all dressed as angels. It's very cute. I have a question. Who were the other angels? Because there was quite a few of the New Direction, all the characters, all in there. But I think I may have noticed some of, if I don't know if they were sort of like extras or if they were like other characters. Like, did you guys see that, or what do you know?
Yeah, you're not imagining it. There are a lot of random people thrown in here.
Because I didn't know if it was, like, random people or if it was meant to be, like, the characters. I couldn't tell.
No, it was, I looked really hard for it on purpose because I knew this question was going to come up, but I couldn't recognize any of them. But then, like, it's funny because it feels like they tried their best to give Darren Criss something to do in this episode, so he just got, like, you know, a pretty large solo in this song, and then he also got one in the finale song, too. And it just was weird because it was like, why him, of all people, would just be showing up in this daydream? I mean, where are we right now? I'm not really sure. It's just, I guess it's just a daydream because Artie's walking again, and that's probably something of note because he doesn't do that too often in his daydreams even. So, you know, so even like, you know, Dancing by Myself, he's wheeling down the halls the whole time. So, yeah, I don't know. And as of performance, this song was not my favorite, and I knew it wasn't going to be simply because I don't think Heather Morris has a very strong voice. She's not.
I think it's gotten better, personally.
I mean, I think her peak was her Britney episode, her first Britney episode.
That was the worst. That was the lowest point. That was auto-tuned as heck.
But that's what I was about to say. She sounds best to me when she's auto-tuned. I don't know how to describe why or what. I think it does something to her tone that I actually like. I know auto-tune is usually the bane of all musical people's existences, but I actually appreciated it there. But and maybe it's because those songs are so overproduced that you can't really hear her voice. Yeah, I don't know. Like, Caitlin, do you have any thoughts on this song other than what I was saying about it being just kind of flat?
I mean, I don't feel myself portrayed in Britney much, but I totally see myself in the idea of Heaven being Blaine and Sam swinging and hanging out with me. So that totally, I felt Britney on a spiritual level at that point. That was about all I got out of
that. Yeah, I felt it. And that was kind of a cool set. Funny. And oh darn, you guys didn't watch Smash. There was a parody, I think, of this.
I did, Mitch. Hey.
Oh, Caitlin, you watched Smash? I didn't know that. That's awesome. So you know what I'm talking about when I'm saying that there was the Heaven on Earth play that Megan Hildy's character was in. Mm-hmm. That they kind of, I think that was meant to be like a parody of the generic, I don't know, like Angels in Heaven scene of most plays, and that Glee just did it without trying to parody it, just letting it be that. But it felt like that parody scene from Smash. Do you know what I'm talking about? With the staircase and everything?
I know what you're talking about, but I think this is more just very general, in general. This is a very typical kind of thing.
Yeah, but do you think it's Smash they were trying to parody this Heaven thing? Because I feel like this is like a pretty common play trope to have like a Heaven scene like this.
I think they were just playing with the common Heaven, and this is what we think it looks like.
Yeah, and Glee, you're saying.
They really like to put Blaine in an angel role, because they had him as the angel in Beauty School Dropout in Grease, and then
that was great. That was great.
Especially on Ed Christmas, and then now here, three times.
He's my angel, so.
Alright, so Mercedes recruits the guys to help Rachel get back into the Broadway world. And now this scene was a little odd, because I guess I understand that the guys know, or the Glee kids know that Rachel's not going to stay there for a while and stuff. But it's still a bit weird, like Mercedes sort of going to them and just being like, we need your help to get Rachel away from you, like away from the Glee Club. That was a bit weird. But I found it really funny when she sort of dissed Kurt, saying, like, she said, oh, it's really good that Rachel has gotten the Glee Club back together, and Kurt just goes, like, excuse me. And then Mercedes goes, and whatever you're doing in here, Kurt, that was really funny. And Mason laughed at that.
The only time, too, that he got shade thrown at him as about being a teacher.
Yeah, but that was really good. I mean, did you guys sort of see what I meant about, would you find it weird how Mercedes was sort of going to them being like, we need your help to get Rachel out of here when they had just gotten the Glee Club together? Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's exactly what Kitty said. She didn't want, you know, to have her hopes up to, that she's going to have a great Glee Club, only to have, I suppose, their leader go away, not the club dissipate, because it seems like there's always going to be someone to replace, but I think Kitty, was Kitty referencing the fact that she didn't want Rachel to leave, or that she didn't want the Glee Club to dissipate again? I don't know. Probably dissipate, right?
Well, she figured that if Rachel left before it got a solid ground, it would all go away again.
Right. So, that, I mean, I think Kitty in this situation is okay with it, and she's not, like, weirded out that she's being asked to help out Jack, because her specifically, she would probably be like, okay, Mercedes, well, I knew
Kitty
her.
Kitty wasn't in this part. It was all the guys.
She's gone to the boys, yeah.
Oh, okay, never mind. Well, then if we had a scene with how Kitty felt later on, I'm sure that's how she would feel.
Yeah, I don't really know what you're talking about. Kitty had, like, one line, but I don't know.
Kitty didn't tie into this, but I do agree that she probably would be irritated to see that Rachel is potentially jumping ship, which is what she was worried about in the first place.
Well, it also starts to feel like a rehash of the plot where Will's going to go on Broadway with April, and everyone gets pissed off at that, so... I guess it's, there's only a certain amount of things that can be done with what your choir director is ditching you to go do. And Broadway seems to be, like, a really, you know, easy storyline to write in, so I get it. But I have to admit, though, that it tasted a little bit like that all over again.
But the difference within that is that everyone's always known that Rachel's dream and goal has always ultimately been Broadway. Despite her setback with TV, it's always been Broadway, whereas... with Will, it hasn't really, like, we spend 2 seasons and 2 years with the kids with him saying his goal is to redo the Glee Club and, like, reimburse his glory days ultimately. So the fact that he's just like, nah, stuff you guys have got to Broadway is a bit different and not as character-driven as it has always been with Rachel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so Brittany tries to get Santana to invite her abuela to the wedding. A bit of backstory, as we remember in season 3, when Santana came out to her abuela, she pretty much disowned her, and we have not heard of this story since then. So anyway, Brittany is very sneaky because Santana obviously doesn't really want, you know, her abuela to be there. So Brittany goes into her abuela's home, acting as a nurse, as her abuela has a bowel issue. And there was a really funny line in this part where Brittany goes, oh, you're looking great. You could be Peter Pan, except in a retirement home production sort of way. I know a guy. And that was really, really funny. Obviously.
I laughed.
Well, I found that to be like an atonement to the relationship now that we've confirmed Brittany and Kurt have with, you know, like Kurt helping Brittany out with the engagement or whatever he was doing with those hearts in the auditorium, and kind of hearkening back to like we were saying too, where Kurt was trying to act straight and date Brittany before. So it's sweet to see like this little moment that, you know, it seems like they kind of hang out off screen and that they would talk about such a thing. Like he's probably like, yeah, no, hey, we're going to do Peter Pan again. Look for more.
Well, I just think it's really nice. Like that they don't have to throw back and use continuity like this, but they do. And it just makes a big difference in my books, I think, because at least it doesn't discredit everything that happened in New York. Because it feels a little bit like they are sort of ignoring a bit of the New York plot and stuff, but I like how just lines like this prove to me that they're not, so I think it's good.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's funny, too, that Peter Pan stuff happened in New York, the retirement home stuff, because it just feels like... I always kind of had this headcanon that Kurt's still going on with that. He's still doing that, like, right now. But I guess not, because he's, like, he's not there. So, bye. Ditched him.
He was going to use his third-year Niata study thing as, like, another retirement home production.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Anyway, so Brittany pretty much is very, very manipulative here and bonds with Santana's abuela over various Latin... things, and Fondue for Two is back, which is always good. However, we found out that Brittany sold it to Univision, so yeah, there's that.
I'm
she
not
clearly didn't learn Spanish from Mr. Shu, because she spoke way better Spanish than Mr. Shu ever spoke.
Yeah, she was really fluent.
Yeah. Univision is like the one Latino channel that I think most cable providers had, right?
Yeah, I only know that from Ariana.
And its ratings are astronomical. They're huge.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I didn't know that. Well, I guess that makes sense if it's like the only basic cable Latina channel. That makes a lot of sense because it feels like, you know, with such a large population of a Latina population in America, it's silly that there's only one channel for them on basic cable and that most of it is spoken in English. I don't know. I find that kind of odd now. Because I would feel very limited if I could only watch Univision as, like, you know, my main thing on TV. But I guess that's why everyone's like, I gotta get into my soaps, because, like, that's part of the culture then, isn't it? That, you know, everyone watches that Univision or whatever.
Yeah, I think that was Brittany's aim as well, so she could really, really bond with her Boiler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then with this scene as well, Boiler's really, you know, like, her character, and I'm guessing this sort of goes back to her Latin heritage and I think culture in a way. She's very, very family driven, but is very, very set in the ways of, you know, boy marries girl. And no leeway there or anything. And she's spitting off like all this thing, how family is blood and family is very important. And Santana's overlooking, saying, like, watching that, it seems like she's like, yeah, well, it is, but, you know, what's all this drama going on? So I think this character is really good for that, but we'll get into that more a bit later. We're back in the auditorium. The boys perform Arthur's theme, Best You Can Do, another Bacharach song. And with this scene, there's flashbacks of Rachel all in New York City, which is really cool. And what I noticed about this scene as well is that all the New Direction boys got lines, which is pretty cool, because they usually, when there's new kids, they just have the alum sing all the time, which is good and bad, but I liked how they addressed the new boys and that they got lines.
And Mason actually scene, had, like,
Rachel says that she's still not ready to go back to New York. So, yeah, Mitch, what do you think?
Well, first off, yeah, this song really had a lot of feels for me. Like, I wouldn't say I was crying, but I was definitely tearing up at, like, those little things, and I wanted to say that it was important that Mason gets, like, a legitimate line here, and I find myself able to finally make, like, an official judgment of what I feel like on his voice. And
what do you mean, Spencer?
Yeah, who's Mason in the show? Oh, that's the twin. Shit.
Yeah.
These new people still confuse me. I'll get it eventually, like, as soon as the show ends. Yeah, but Spencer, he has a very, very light falsetto-y voice, and I think I was right in my analysis last week, Jack, when I was saying, you know, and Caitlin, too, you were on, when I was saying that Kitty's would overpower his because she has a very strong voice and his is a little bit less. Yeah, so I don't know.
I like it.
You don't like it?
It just seems really weak. You know,
it is weak, but I appreciate it.
It's just, yeah.
No, I appreciate it in a way that makes, that just adds to, like, a variety of the members in this new club. And most of them, I really do find myself, like, spot on loving. Absolutely loving. Caitlin, do you like this voice that we finally get to hear?
I honestly didn't notice. I was too consumed with Rachel Berry feelings.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's easy to become lost in, I agree. Yeah.
All the flashbacks, Rachel!
Mm-hmm.
I love that this is happening, because I said that I wanted Rachel just to be, you know, at her lowest point, and she has now. She's building back up again to Broadway, and it's done really well. I love it. It's so good. So in the next scene, Santana is a little upset at Brittany for going behind her back with the Abuela, but they eventually work things out, and Santana says that her Abuela is exactly the same as she was 3 years ago, and despite the progression that the world has seen with equality with this sort of stuff, she still has not changed and will still hold her current views. Now, a bit of a side note, Brittany this season, I was a little off on it at the start. I thought, yeah, it's all right. It's just they're going, doing their thing. And I used to like Brittany quite a lot. But this episode, really solid stuff. Caitlin, what do you think? Have you always been a Brittany fan, or what do you think about it this season?
I've never been a particularly big fan of theirs. I didn't think they were a good couple past high school. But the way they've been written this season, I have just loved them. I think they're really well written, especially this episode. I thought they were so good together and so supportive. Yeah. And just everything was done out of pure love and concern for each other, and it was really sweet.
Yeah, I agree. Mitch, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think that you guys are head on the nail with Brittany being sweet and good and healthy, and everything Kurt should not have said what he said against. And it's making me really happy to see a nice, good, successful ship in the show that anyone watching can, you know, hopefully base their own thoughts and processes on, you know, their own personal relationships, particularly back to where Brittany was saying that being with Santana makes her feel like she's in heaven. That's a great thing. I don't know that there are too many ships on this show that I've at least stuck on the good part long enough to, you know, feel that way, to feel like being with your significant other is like heaven. And that's awesome. And it just makes me so happy. And I know that you can tell Brittany and Santana both need each other in very specific ways that the other doesn't. So they can support in different ways. And that it adds, you know, variety and excitement to their relationship. And they're both really supportive of each other. It's everything that Brittana should be. It is. It's a gold star relationship right now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's and it's good to think that we're not going to have any sort of drama come between the two. That this is going to be a smooth ride, which I think is a nice change.
We haven't had too many of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one cheat on anyone, please. I do not need that at this point. No.
So in the next scene, Sam sings the song, and I forgot to write it in the Google Docs, so forgive me. It's the one where birds suddenly appear, and they're close to you, whatever it's called. Now, Sam Sadie's, this scene ends with Sam singing it to Mercedes. Now, I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here. not in a bad way. So, they have a very mature conversation, and obviously Sam is still very hung up over Mercedes. He even said to Rachel that, like, he has a little thing for her, but he's got even a bigger thing for Mercedes. And she is very, very mature and explains to him that it's okay for them to both be jealous about the prospect of seeing other people, because she mentions that she has been seeing someone else and a few other guys as well, but there's one guy that sort of sticks. And they clarify that they really do love each other, but, you know, they're just better as friends. And Mercedes needs Sam to help heal Rachel's heart. Now, even though I am very, very upset that this seems like it is the end of Sam Sadie's, I do appreciate how it was handled. These two have always been very mature with each other and have been very different to the other relationships we've seen on this show. And I like how, even though they're not going to be together, that they can clarify that they're going to be good friends. And yeah, however, I don't agree with the part how Mercedes needs Sam to heal Rachel's heart. I don't think he's right for that. Yeah.
Caleb, what do you think? I don't think that's the end of Sam Sadie's at all. I think, like, they're setting up Sam and Rachel to be a thing for a little while, and then at the end, like, something else will happen. I think they're going to get together at the very end, but I think there's a gap before they're going to actually get together.
Go ahead, Jack.
It's breaking my heart to say this, but, like, Mercedes seems like she really is over it, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The fact that she's with a man who seems to be fitting quite the bill of what she was looking for in a relationship, and that she was looking specifically for, you know, a kind, caring gentleman who was going to save himself for marriage, and also seems to be, you know, I assume, quite religious if he's in a Christian rock band. So those are things that Sam was trying to work on, but I guess that these things kind of came innately with her new man. So we could get into a discussion over whether the man who's willing to change himself and work himself to be better for you is better than the one that came prepackaged nicely, because that could define whether or not Sam Sadie's could happen again, whether or not she's going to stay with this new Christian rocker.
The show is far too obsessed with keeping the high school couples together forever, too. So I think they're going to try and pair up as many of the characters as they can before the end.
Yeah.
See, I mean, I do hope that, but I'm also not, like, the kind of guy, because I know a lot of this fandom is, who are just like, I will go down with this ship, you know, like, it's my OTP, I would not accept anything else. I'm not like that. If I can see that the two characters on the screen have moved apart in a very mature way, like these two have, I will accept the fact that they won't get back together, even though I would love for them to, and I hope they do. But, I mean, I honestly think that Sam and Rachel won't end up together, because I'm going to, bit of a spoiler alert here, skip ahead 30 seconds, I guess, if you don't want to hear this. Jesse St. James has been confirmed to come back. Jonathan Groff is on set for the last
episode. That's what I was trying to dance around.
Okay, so that's official now. Remember I was like, is that happening last episode?
Yeah, so I'm going with the theory that Natalie has said that it's going to end with Rachel back in New York away. Like, her and Sam didn't work out for obvious reasons, I think. And then they run in, then Jesse and Rachel run into each other in a coffee shop, and I really hope that happens.
That would be interesting. Like, not even to show the ship, but just show that it has potential or that it might happen again. I'd even be happy with more of an open ending like that, because I think, like, a definitive one for Rachel at this point won't feel as satisfying as the definitive one we were meant to have, official. So anything that settles won't feel as right as what our real definitive one should have been, if you know what I mean.
We just, as an audience, we just have more to go off with Jesse, you know? Rachel mm-hmm. and Jesse have such a rich history that Sam and Rachel don't, apart from the fact that they've been friends in the Glee Club and in New York, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing with Sam, though, is that he has a lot in common with Finn, and I think in that way he's very safe for Rachel, so it would be a very safe way for her to kind of get back out and start feeling romantic feelings again. You know, it might not be an epic love, but because they have all the similarities, it would be a good stepping stone for her to open her heart up again.
And you know, but that's what worries me, though, because if that ends really badly, she could be more heartbroken and just be lower than she has been in the 3 months that she took off, like, in seclusion, you know. And even though I was a very big proponent of Rachel having to realize she's messed up and having to rebuild herself up, I've seen that happen, so I don't really want her to have any huge missteps along the way. And her falling for a guy who was very much like her, very much like Finn, and not ending well could really damage her more, and I don't think she needs that.
I don't think they would do that to her, though. Like, I think they've given her her most major trials at this point, so I have a feeling Sam and Rachel will experiment, and then they'll amicably say this is not going to work, and then Sam probably wants to stay in Lima or whatever, and Rachel is going to go back to New York. I don't think it's going to end badly,
and I hope that it doesn't, because at this point of the whole series, I just want to see everyone go into the sunset happy. I don't want any huge dramas, you know.
Well, you say you want that, but Caitlin says she doesn't want the high school.
I'm saying I don't want that.
Never mind. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I feel that there has to be some heartache, and there has to be some, oh, it didn't work out, and there has to be some failures and careers and stuff for this show to feel realistic. But if everyone really just ends up with, you know, neatly and cleanly who we thought they should have been, looking at you, Clayne, then I'm not going to be happy. And I'm saying we very lightly there, because I mentioned Clayne. Because
I'm saying that, like, there has to be some drama or else the TV show would be boring, you know?
Well, I think that's...
Like, that's just TV show, like, politics, really. But, like, I still want to see nothing huge happen and everyone sort of be happy by the end of it all in a very well-done way.
I know. Well, I think in the end of the day, too, that we were meant to feel a lot of that struggle with Clayne, because we're meant to understand, from the show's perspective, that... this was a really good thing that Blaine and Dave had, and now it's just kind of, like, being squashed just... out of nowhere, and it's going to be very frustrating because, as we said the last episode, Caitlin, that I remember you saying, like, they're officially, like, bringing back Clayne. This is it. Like, we've seen the seeds, and now they're being sown. It's done.
Alas.
Alas, indeed. Yeah,
it's
so
inevitable.
Hey, I
the
mean,
show
at least some...
thinks it's the healthy relationship that it's not.
No, and that's why I'm so happy with this Britannia episode.
Does the show think that?
Oh, it must if it's bringing it back together. So like. You know, upstream.
Yeah, I think.
Caitlin, do you think the show sort of does think that they are like the perfect couple? Or
I do, absolutely. I think that they keep pulling them apart and bringing them together, and there's no way they're not going to end up together at the end of the series the way their trajectory is going. And I think they think, in spite of everything that they have written, that it's a good fairy tale ending.
Interesting.
Okay. I don't agree, but I think the show itself thinks that.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that.
And it's difficult, anyway, too, because we say the show itself, but what is the show itself but a bunch of different screenwriters, you know? Because there are a lot of different people coming in to Glee that can define whether or not a ship takes a certain direction. Not the finality of it. I'd like to say that perhaps Ryan Murphy has the final choice of what happens. So maybe we should just define it as Ryan Murphy thinks that Clayne is healthy, because Ryan Murphy is putting them back together when it's written, you know, that it wasn't.
I don't know. Like, with Ryan Murphy and stuff, like, I hope that him, Ian Brennan, and Brad Falchuk all write the last episode, because they work well together when it's them three just themselves. Like, for example, when those three wrote the very first episode of this season, and that was one of the greatest Glee episodes ever, in my opinion. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, that was
anyway,
good.
Yeah. Okay, so in the next scene, Rachel gets Mercedes to look after the Glee Club. because she's going to go to the audition that Mercedes set up for her. Rachel has a huge meltdown, and it's such a really real character moment. She tells Mercedes that she's never been this scared, and that in high school she got used to people laughing at her, but she knew that one day she would make it and prove to them that she's not a joke. And then when it all fell apart, she found out that when people, there's a lot worse laughing that you could have, you know, done at you. She just really doesn't want to fail again, and Mercedes offers great advice, and these two are just freaking incredible together.
Oh yeah.
The scene is amazing.
Hells yeah.
Leah's acting as well was just incredible.
Yeah.
Her progression into that meltdown was just amazing.
I was thinking of that because I remember Natalie saying that she was excited to see Leah in Scream Queens coming up because she didn't feel that Rachel was allowing Leah to perform to her greatest emotional depths. But she reached that here. I feel she really did. This felt like such a real moment. There was nothing comical or like cartoonish about this. This was as real as it can get for what it feels like when you've lost everything. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it makes so much sense that Rachel is terrified of this. Like, for so many different reasons. She's had so many things taken away or have screwed up, and she's suffered so much that, of course, she's terrified of taking this step and putting herself out back in the world. Like, she's also struggling with like the romance angle, so in a lot of ways she's dealing with having to put herself back out there after everything she's been through. So it makes so much sense that she would be scared of that, and she's found this kind of comfortable cocoon back in the place where she was kind of, she found herself. So stepping out of that again after everything she's gone through would be terrifying. So it was just such a real moment, and it made her reaction just made so much sense.
Yeah, I could not have said that better myself. Yeah, I agree 100%. And it's just the perfect progression for this character, you know, after everything that's happened. Like you said, of course this is how she's going to feel now. It's just, yeah. I'm really happy because Rachel's my favorite character, and just the fact that I thought that they really effed her up in this season 5 finale, I'm glad to see they haven't, and that was used as like a vehicle to how she is now, and it's really good. Really good to see.
Yeah, and another woman was the one who supported her. That I just love.
Yeah,
so not
only that, just that, like, that, yeah, the, as we and said Mercedes, before, the friendship has gotten to this point. Yeah.
Yeah, Jack, this was the scene that I was thinking the most of of what you're going to love when I was writing to you before you seen the episode. You're like, is it Mitch?
Yeah, Mitch, yeah.
And I'm like, Bay Sadies.
I am always at work when the episode is on, so I can't watch it until like 8 hours after I finish. And I always ask Mitch what his thoughts were, and all he would say to me was, Bay effing Sadies. Bay Sadies. I was like,
ah, man. Oh, yeah. This was the specific moment, Jack, that I was also referencing before that was the continuity of where Mercedes goes, no, I told you, you have to get back into the swing of things. At least I think she said that in this scene. I don't know. She's like, you have to get back into dating. I told you that a while ago, that when you're ready, it's time. And that's why I love this like string of Mercedes and Rachel. It's so beautiful. It makes me really happy, and it feels really good. This is almost as beautiful as Britannia.
Badly, and it was done better than like Glee handles a lot of things. So it was just great to see.
I know.
Yeah. So in the next scene, Zatanna sings Alfie to her abuela in the auditorium. Now, once this song is over, amidst a beautiful speech that Zatanna has, abuela says, oh, sorry, and they come out to her abuela, Brittany and Zatanna, that they're getting married. Abuela says that she loves Zatanna but does not love her sin. Brittany stands up for Zatanna and was very well spoken in this as well. And yeah. Now, what I loved about this scene, a few things, is that Zatanna tried. Like, she really tried. She was nice to her abuela. She said, you're looking good. Like, have you been well? She really tried to sort of mend things a bit. And then they sort of went into this. And I really liked that abuela said no. Only because I was thought the way Glee usually does things is somebody doesn't like an idea and then they hear a song sing and then they like it again. And I really appreciated that abuela's character, of course, she's not going to think that way. And, I mean, ultimately, I guess she's going to be at the wedding. I don't know how the season's going to play out, but I like how it wasn't. I like how it just wasn't such a quick turn. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I understand family and love. I hear this song saying, you said all this, and now I feel this. It wasn't like that. It was like, no, yeah. I don't like this. Like, don't come into my home and do this to me. Like, I thought that that's, on a character point, It was fantastic.
She's too deeply entrenched in her beliefs. Like, it's been something that she's believed her entire life, and it's just, it's too much for her to just turn it off like that. So it makes, it's far more realistic that she would say no than just have a magical moment of, oh, of course, your beautiful song. Well, then why didn't Santana sing a song 3 seasons ago?
But what was El Futuro? Like, what was that meant to represent in this situation? It was just like, I don't know, like, toss a dart, Santana will sing this song for her abuela. I don't know, it was silly. But then, talking more specifically about Britney's speech, I'm not sure how to feel about it, because what she said was pretty harsh. And
she needed to hear that, though.
I don't know, because I don't know if I agree with the way she said it, because just saying that basically you're waiting for someone to die because you don't like one of their beliefs seemed a little bit too extreme. I don't know. It seems like it's so hard. It's like a fine line to run. But Jack, what do you think?
Well, she was just like, it's a generational turnover. Like, this is why equality is becoming, you know, what it should be.
Yeah.
And not the fact that, like, you being alive means that, you know, you can make us not get married. Just the fact that you're kind of annoying and that you're doing this is, you know, annoying. And I like that. I thought it was good. And she needed to be harsh to her abuela, because Santana would never really say all that stuff to her because of the Latina family bonds that they have. But Britney doesn't have that. Like, she's going to stand up for her fiance, and it was really good.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, like, it felt like a very Santana kind of speech to give, but because Santana just was incapable of doing that to her abuela, like, Britney just did what Santana would usually do in that situation.
Yeah, and I don't know too much about the culture, but then I thought it was really interesting how then her abuela was like, are you going to stand there and let her talk to me like this? Like, despite everything, she was still expect Santana to not, like, to defend her. I thought that was interesting. I mean, I don't know much about the culture, but I guess that's sort of, like, it seems like family is a huge, like, importance in that, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It was a very realistic representation of, I think, what you would expect in a real-world Latino family, so, yeah, I'm glad that Glee represented it the way they did, and it's hard because, I always get afraid that when something happens in a show, this is kind of like an errant fear, that everyone will associate said thing with entire culture and or group. And now I'm afraid that it might have been represented that all Latinos of a certain age will not like gay marriage, but I know that's not true myself, because I've had Latino friends that are gay that have had grandparents that were very accepting. So it could have gone either way. It really could have been that, you know, it could also come down to a personality thing. Like, abuela could have personally been like, I know that my beliefs are so embedded, but I'm going to work hard for you to do it because I love you so much to, like, be there for you and enjoy it or whatever. So I think that also we should note that, like I was just saying, this was a personal decision of abuela amongst her embedded beliefs, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right, so back in the teacher's room, Rachel's back from her audition, and she tells Mercedes and Sam about it, and seems very confident. Mercedes lets her know that it doesn't matter if she doesn't get the audition. What matters is that she got back out there, she set out what she intended to do, and was very confident while doing so. And that was really good. And Rachel and Sam plan a date, and ugh. Yeah, I just hope this Sam Chill storyline ends how we said before, how, like, Rachel goes to New York, Sam wants to stay in Lima, and then Rachel runs to Jesse.
Let's just bask in how wonderful Mercedes and Rachel are. Let's just do that. Maybe so Rachel good. And Mercedes will get together at the end. That I can get behind, because they were fabulous.
Like, even if it's platonic, I'd still appreciate it. You know, if they were just like, I don't even like any of these people in our high school anymore, because I don't, they make a voice of their own. Rachel goes, if I'm going to have to be with someone from the high school, I'm going to choose to be with Mercedes. Sure, we're not going to sleep with each other, but we're going to have a great time because we actually get along. Bye.
Well, they've done that before with the prom, when they went to prom together with Sam.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, F you guys, we're just going to go with each other.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is, Caitlin, it is frustrating, the confines that Glee puts itself in, because it was fun seeing Rachel date, like, I should say, with the high school relationships needed to be the OTPs or whatever, but it was fun seeing Rachel, you know, like, with Brody for a bit, and, like, you know, just dating outside.
That wasn't fun for anyone, Brody and Rachel.
Well, I don't like what Brody did, but it was a fun exploration of her character to see how she would deal with someone of a much different personality, you know?
Oh, I agree with that, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, so in the next scene, last scene of the episode, Santana and Brittany both agree that they don't need the Abuela there because their love for each other is all that matters. And the Glee Club all offers their support and help for the wedding. Kitty had a nice line where she said that her and the new kids will do, like, hand out flyers and do waitering or whatever she said. That was good, though, because I like how that addressed it, like, just because they've known each other for 3 weeks doesn't mean they're best friends, like how the Glee Club usually does things.
Yeah.
I will release the doves. There better be doves. And Harvey's like, oh, there will be doves.
Yeah, it was really nice. And then they all sing What the World Needs Now. And Artie's speech with this was really good, how, like, he was saying, you know, there's another gap at the Lopez family table, but we all want to have, you know, that spot because we're all your family, and that was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really sweet. And it's funny, too.
It was a nice way to cap off the episode.
What? Oh, yeah, it's a nice way to cut off the episode. Well, yeah. The episode is titled What the World Needs Now, and I guess that can kind of relate back to, like, the world needs more equality now. It doesn't need this older generation, I suppose, and the world needs Rachel on Broadway's, that kind of stuff. I'm never really too big of a fan of an episode that titles itself after a song they sung in it. It just feels really unoriginal, and like they really didn't try too hard to think of a title for it. I feel like they really could have come up with something a little bit more original here.
I like it, especially if it's like a tribute.
Yeah. Yeah, well, once again, if I appreciated the artist at all, if I knew who he was, I'd probably like this a little bit more, but, you know, not too familiar.
Well, and the episode was all about this genuine love between two people, so what the world needs now is more love, like Brittany and Santana have for each other, and the love of this family. All the great friendships and how much they all love each other. So it was very much about the love between all these people.
Yeah.
The music worked well for that, but maybe, like, I mean, this episode is already, like, an A in my books, but it would have made an A+ if it had, like, music that I recognized that portrayed the same message.
And, like, two fewer songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Jack, I need to quote myself on Twitter, which just seems really, like, you know, very hoity-toity to do, where I said that this episode would have been 100 if it wasn't for the Emma stand-in. That's where it lost its A+ for me.
Yeah, but the mentions. This scene ends as well with all the Glee kids going to Will's apartment. We almost got a whole episode with that Will, but alas, all having lunch or dinner and meeting his baby for the first time, it seems. And as the camera zooms into Will's apartment, there is fake Emma standing there with her back turned with red hair.
It's the fakest Emma I've ever seen. It just... I don't know, like, you could tell someone's stance, and it didn't even remotely fit what she would have looked like. It was so frustrating.
It drew far more attention than Emma just not being there.
Right, and even if they wanted to have a stand-in, they didn't have to have her the center of any shot. They could have put her in the background and left that as kind of like a little Easter egg for people to find. Like, that would have been better. Like, it's almost like showing off a stunt double in the middle, in the center of a shot for, like,
she was in the back corner.
I thought she was talking to, like, I don't know who she was talking to, but, like, the first shot...
her back was turned, and she was facing the wall in the corner, but
she so she was just staring at the corner, like, I'm a bad person.
I think she was supposed to be, like, prepping something for the party.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No, it's just because Will finally let her out of his basement. You know? So you can only stand in the corner, cook food.
Or maybe this is really just fake Emma. Like, we're going to find out that this is fake Emma, that Will's been delusioned this whole time, that she died during childbirth, and that he's just hired this woman to act as Emma from there on out.
Well, no, the proper reason why that did it is because Jamie Mace is back in the next episode, so they needed to remind us that Will didn't magically find this baby, and that he actually conceived it with somebody else.
So she is in the next episode. I was having Twitter conversations about whether or not she was going to without spoiling anything, and I think someone just accidentally did, where they were like, no, she's back! I was just kind of speculating, like, maybe she's just too busy with the Miller show or whatever going on, but it still doesn't explain why... they really couldn't have booked her for this one scene, but I guess it's because there was, like...
they wouldn't want to pay her rate for, like, a 2-second appearance on screen.
Yeah, for not even talking, because then again, you could probably pick out a couple people in that group scene that didn't talk. If not, I'd be shocked, but... because there was a lot of people. What I wanted to say is that maybe because there were so many people, getting the schedule worked together for everyone would have worked but hers, so they were just like, all right, stand in for you, we have everyone else good, goodbye, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah. And I, as you were talking, I just remembered that We forgot to mention how Mercedes, how Rachel says to Mercedes that she doesn't trust Kurt with the Glee Club, and that was his second shade throwing as a teacher. So funny. Yeah.
That was very funny. Oh, wait, there's more, Jack. You can't miss out the ships. There were ships in here.
What?
There was Klain, and then there was Kitty Artie.
Yeah, Kurt. I forgot. Sorry. Yeah, so Kurt opens the door, and Blaine walks in, and Kurt kind of looks outside, just like, oh, is Krofsky? Oh, no, Krofsky's not here. Oh, why is Krofsky not here? Oh, what's going on there? So we might get more of that next episode.
Right, because it couldn't be any hundred reasons that Krofsky didn't come to a party for people.
It's because it was a bad night at Scandals.
or he was sick, or he didn't feel invited, or like he should intrude on the moment, or any hundred reasons, but it's like, no, they clearly broke up, or just something obnoxious like that.
I have a question to ask about Klain, but I don't want to say it now because it's maybe a potential big spoiler. So I think at the end of this episode, I need to ask you guys a question, and it will be a spoiler chat, all right? Because,
listen after the credits, guys. I'll put it there so you can really hear
After credits, yeah. Okay. All right. So that ends that episode. It was a really good episode. And we already spoke about it, but if you were to rate this episode as a grade, like on paper, and Kate, and I know you know a lot about grading papers. Audrey, I think I said it would be an A, but I think I would just demote it to a B+. Not that it was bad or anything, just because it could have had a little bit more and I would have changed a few things, but ultimately it was a very solid episode. I loved it, especially compared to the Hurt Locker Part 1 that we had 2 weeks ago.
I'm still recovering.
It just pisses me off, because if Glee knows they can do an episode like this, why aren't all episodes at this standard? Anyway, Mitchell, what do you think? What would you rate this episode? So I'm B+.
I kid you not that I would have given it an A+, not for the Emma stand-in. That was it. Because everything else I was fine with. I really was. And that's when I find a good... I don't find that I love a TV episode. I find that I'm fine with it. And that's good, because I am damn critical. I pick apart shit so intensely.
I know you do.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty... Like, you should hear me go on about Team Wolf to Jack. It's hilarious. But probably not for him. That's it. Like, almost A+. You almost got me, Glee. You almost got there.
So you're A?
Caitlin, it seems like such a menial thing to knock it down for, but it really upset me, okay? Because I've been really looking forward to her coming back. Ugh.
Take a breath.
Yeah, seriously.
For real. I would give it an A- because the pacing was a little slow and it had too many songs, but the content otherwise was very, very good.
I forgot that minus was a choice. I'll go A- as well.
Yeah, I was thinking of that, Jack. I was like, huh? And I think I also...
From A to B+. No, A to A-, I am.
You know, also, I should say that there was one moment that I can say... Two moments that I could say I more than loved. It was... I don't know. Like, I guess I could say like the abuela talk at the end. That was a specific moment that I loved. Just that, you know, it didn't, like Caitlin was saying, didn't wrap up nicely, and that she didn't accept. And then also promises that Rachel sings was a fabulous song to sing for Christian.
So good.
Great.
That good. Final note gave me chills.
Oh yeah.
She like spread her arms back. And everything. I know. It was so good.
Rachel is back.
We
haven't heard
this from Rachel in a long time, and it was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wouldn't say it quite felt like Don't Rain on My Parade, but it had airs of that, you know?
She did the whole arm thing, the whole, you know, like when she lifts up her arms with the big belting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And no one can see me, but I did that, like,
I'll like, imagine it. How's that sound?
Yeah. I did it too, Jack, so don't feel bad.
Oh, that's funny.
All right, so nothing else to add. We're going to feedback. So we've got a few feedbacks from, we got two comments from last week's episode from Glee Chat, and then some stuff from this week's episode. So I'll read the first one. So this is from Matt on the Hyperwool post. He says, okay, this is kind of funny, and that's why I wanted to read this one. I've seen the last two episodes while high, and I've really enjoyed them. The second part more so. I think it's good to appreciate classic Glee, but just accept it for what it is in its current form and laugh along. Also, the Rachel / New Directions moments were all beautiful. I liked Rachel better as a teacher without Kurt there. Wish he would just go away and let Rachel have her Glee Club.
Preach.
So I agree with all that. And the reason why I wanted to read this one is because I related. Not because I was high while I watched the two episodes, but I, when I first watched part two, when I went to part two, we were throwing my brother a surprise 18th party, so I couldn't, like, spend an hour in my room watching the show. So I sort of had to duck in and out and watch 5 minutes at a time, so it's kind of sporadic. But as the night would go on, I was having more drinks. So by the time I got to the last scene, I was a bit intoxicated. So I thought to myself, maybe that's why I enjoyed the episode a lot more. But then I watched it again, and no, it was a better episode, part two. So
not just because you were drunk.
Not because I was drunk or high. All right, who wants to read the second one?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take the hypothetical comment, and then Caitlin, if you want to take the Twitter.
Yep.
So this comment comes from, actually on Facebook, I should say, from Michael Vartanian that said, "I'm so glad John defended the Hurt Locker episodes. I've watched from the beginning as well, and I prefer this version of the show in comparison to season 5. I've been waiting for an episode like the Hurt Locker for years. It reminded me of the craziness of episodes like Throwdown in season 1. I applaud the writers for making fun of us clean shippers and making fun of fandom in general. Who better to skewer us all than Sue Sylvester herself?" And I really appreciate this comment because, Michael, you are one of the most sane and happy and good clean shippers I've talked to in a while, because some of them just attack, and you did it. You discussed this in a nice way. This was good.
Very well spoken.
I really appreciate the way you wrote that. So thank you, Michael.
Thank you. All right, so Caitlin will take the tweets.
Sure. So first we have a tweet from Willow, who asked who we thought was playing the fake Emma on the episode.
I want to look up the IMDb and see if she was credited, just so I can compare and see if they even have, like, similar facial features. I doubt it.
It's probably, like, a crew member they just threw in the wig or something.
You have red hair.
Just so when they wanted to put a wig on, we're like, go, stand in the corner.
I know, imagine if it was, like, Bonnie Wright, and we were like, what?
And then my Elizabeth tweeted, "Coffee and Glee Chat, Sunday."
Ooh.
Well, thank you for listening.
That's how I'm spending my Sunday now. I have my coffee recording Glee Chat.
This is the Glee Chat coffee hour, and welcome for our special guest. This is Emma's stand-in. So tell us, what was it like when you were... I'll stop.
Okay.
Doesn't need his coffee.
No, I do not. I just thought of something. We had a 700th song or some bullshit in this episode. I just didn't care. But yeah, everyone else seemed to care about it.
Now.
So that was the last song. That's what the world needs now. Did that live up to whatever 700th song predictions you might have had, guys? I don't know. Did you care?
It was cool. I mean, I actually saw something on Tumblr yesterday listing each, like, 100 milestone, and if I can remember it, I think, this is going to sound crazy, but I just saw it yesterday. I don't know this off the top of my head. Beautiful was number 1 by Mercedes in season 1. Number 2 was, something. Number 3 was Paradise by the Dash. No, number 300 was Rumor Has It Someone Like You from season 3. Number 4 was Paradise by the Dashboard Light, 400. Mm-hmm. The 5th one, can't remember. 600.
Shout?
Yes, I think that was a 600. No, that would have been 500, sorry. Yeah, that would have been the 500th episode, 500th song. 600 something, and then 700 was now, so yeah.
Nice. Well, apparently something someone cares like about milestones.
I'll try and find that, and I don't know.
Well, also, you could probably check out, Jack, that one list of all of the songs ever done on Glee, kind of in order, that the social media for Fox put out. Did you see that? Remember I sent you that a little bit ago?
Yeah, when I first saw that, I didn't know what you were talking about. I was like, it just is a big number that says 700 on it. And then I looked closer and I was like, oh, it has every single, like, song.
Yeah. No, we'll send that out. I'll put it in the show notes and the like so that everyone could check out this image, because once again, it's very in-depth and it seems like a lot of work went into it, but not as much as they could have done. Like, if you're doing all that work, at least put them in order, because, like, most of them are, but then every once in a while one will jump from, like, 5 episodes, you know, from the future back, and it's weird. So it's a decent little whatever those images are called when you make up images from a word or whatever. I'm sure there's a special term for that. So yeah, check that out.
So I've actually found a list, because I realized I did like it on Tumblr, so I've got it here. So 100 was Beautiful, sung by Mercedes by Christina Aguilera. 200 was Silly Love Songs by Paul McCartney, sung by the Warblers. 300 was Rumour Has It Someone Like You, sung by the Troubletones. 400 was Paradise by the Dashboard Light by Meatloaf featuring Ellen Foley. Obviously, the New Directions, their best number ever. 500 was Shout by the Isley Brothers, sung by the New Glee Club, I guess, in season 4. 600 was Whenever I Call You Friends, performed by Kenny Loggins and Stevie Nicks, by Tanner and Artie. 700, is, as we know, is What the World Needs Now by Burt Bacharach.
It's the last 100 miles Doom will have.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. I'm fine with that.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, and it's funny too, because I always wonder, like, how songs are actually counted as being a song on the show. It's like, how long do they have to be sung? Because sometimes, like...
Well, go ahead. And also the unreleased songs, like, do the Christmas songs that never were never in episodes, right. They count, or...
Right, I don't know, because it's like, I don't know, like, that list you came up with, I feel like could have just been, like, what one person decided was their version of the 100 songs, and they put out, and then the rest of the world just took that. I don't know if they're ever going to know it. I think I'm okay with that. I really do. Yeah.
Okay, so we finished recording. Yay. It was a very good episode. Now, next week is the big 100th episode of Glee Chat. We have some things planned.
Speaking of hundreds, oh my God, exactly really?
What? Yeah, so just keep an eye on our social media. So you've got our Facebook page, just search Glee Chat, Twitter at Glee underscore chat, Instagram one word Glee Chat, and yeah, that's it. So tune in to after the credits for a little bit of a spoiler discussion because I need to ask something. yeah, good recording, guys. We'll see you after the credits and then next week. Bye.
Bye. I was waiting for it. I was like, it's gonna come. Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right, spoilers. What are they, Jack? I need to know what the question was. This whole time I've been wondering and I didn't know, so...
Because, okay, so for the wedding, is Clayne impromptu getting married?
Yes.
They are.
Yes.
Oh shit! Positive? Wait, are they getting? Yes. I didn't. This is my first. I didn't know this.
Oh, sorry.
Clayne is getting. No, it's fine.
It's a double wedding with Bert Hummel officiating.
Shut the front door.
Oh, he's officiating.
Yes, that was when it was filming. There were pictures that were showing Bert.
Because I remember I read it, and then I never heard about it again, so I was like, oh, maybe it's just like a rumor.
How well, dare!
In the episode stills that they've released, like, they haven't shown... there. You can see, like, all the groomsmen and everything are wearing white, and there's a picture, and Blaine is in the background, and he's in a black suit, which also indicates that they're getting married at that point, too.
In what universe is it okay for Kurt to, like, backhand the relationship of Britannia itself and what it's doing, and then at their own wedding, which should be their own thing, Kurt decides that it's okay for him to just get married in it too? What the...
It discredits a lot of, like, stuff they've worked up to at this point with their relationship. Well, like, not having a relationship and...
Yeah. Apparently their friends, like, encourage them to do it, which was, like, the episode synopsis said, and I'm like...
So this is, like, next episode coming up.
It's 6:08.
Oh, so yeah, that's so two more. Like,
so, like, if we don't get any Clayne next episode...
Well, the preview has them almost kissing, so...
Oh, that's right. Really, yeah, no,
I'm just glad that we were right, that we knew all this time that they were never going to fool us with any of this Dave stuff. Like, we're going to have Clayne in the end, like it or not. So that, I mean, I feel less shocked now that we've predicted that, you know? Yikes. Oh, God. Oh, God, no. I feel like that one thing in the episode, you know, that gif that goes around of... Whatever, you know what I'm talking about if you know. Okay, so
it just has words coming out of his mouth.
I do have words coming out. I don't know how to react to that. It's just
I still don't like it.
No,
I'll never like it.
I never will. It's going to leave a sour taste in my mouth when this show ends to know that that happened. It really will. And it's weird,
I just,
because
like, heard that Clayne, so I'm just like whatever.
Well, what's weird about it is that it's happening like before the show is ending forever, so like we're gonna see more Clayne, and that's just weird to me because if anything, I imagine them building up Clayne for like, you know, the rest of the season to then be like them as almost not the final shot. Like, I'm imagining Rachel's going to be doing something for the final shot of the show, but they're going to be like, well, the final plot line's tied up. And now they're not, because they're tied up now. So what do we have to look forward to? What's like the ending? Like, we kind of have a timeline with sectionals now. Wasn't it like 5 weeks until, and that must be the finale, right?
They're filming that like right now.
Okay, so that's the finale then. It must be.
And they're filming. They just started filming the finale.
All right.
I thought the sectionals would be like the second last episode.
Well, do you know which it is, Caitlin? Is it the second to last, or is it the finale episode?
I just know that they've been filming them very close together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we have that. So it could be like Rachel like holding the trophy, being like, "I did it," you know, and that's the thing. So.
It's going. I'm sure that it'll be somewhat Finn-centric as well.
Well, I mean, not even past that shot of her holding the trophy, she might look over to like that one, you know, picture of him, and then that'll be the thing, like the one.
I don't know. I just can't shake the feeling that she's going to visit his grave. I don't know why I think that, but I just always think that when I think of the final episode.
Wishing you were somewhere here again, please.
Wishing what?
From Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
Yeah, the song she sings at her father's grave is just, Rachel / Leah would do wonderfully on that. All right, so I guess that's spoilers, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, well, goodbye for real.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Bye.